How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jay King from MassLive.com. Today, I'm bringing you this show by myself. I will soon be joined by Celtics Hub's Ryan Bernardoni, one of the sharpest minds in the Celtics blogosphere, an expert on the collective bargaining agreement. Today, he's going to be talking about possible CBA changes, rumored CBA changes that could impact, well, a lot about the Celtics' future. It could impact how much money they have to chase a star this summer. It could impact what path they'll have to take to become a contender. There are a lot of changes, and Ryan will break them down for you, tell you which players they might have to let walk to be able to chase a star, a lot of different stuff. So look forward to that interview. It's going to be great. Before we talk about a couple of other things, just want to remind you, you know the drill. Follow us. Search for the Locked On Celtics podcast. Follow us wherever you listen to podcasts. Audio Boom, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever else. Go follow us, subscribe to us, give us a 5-star rating. We're going to be here for you every Monday through Friday, always Celtics, all the time. So give us a follow, give us a listen. Come back every day. Make us a part of your life. I think your lives will be a lot better if you can hear my beautiful voice every morning, every afternoon, whenever it is you listen to the show. Before we get to the interview, just want to touch on a couple of news bits. One is that Avery Bradley's right shoulder was very sore, causing him to miss Tuesday's practice. Might not be a big deal, but that's a worry sign. Apparently it's been bothering him since training camp. He woke up Tuesday. It was very sore. That's a shoulder he had surgically operated in 2012. So maybe not a big deal, but certainly something to keep an eye on. A little worrisome for Celtics fans because, man, Avery Bradley's gotten off to a fantastic start. It's not a good time, never a good time for somebody to deal with nagging shoulder soreness in his shooting shoulder, but especially now with how well Avery Bradley's playing and really how much the Celtics need a guy like him who can put the ball in the basket from outside and really get after it defensively. So Avery Bradley, hopefully he's okay. He still hasn't been ruled out from playing Wednesday against the Chicago Bulls, so we'll see if it's a big deal. We'll see if the concerns are warranted. Not a good sign, though, that he's dealt with such a nagging issue since the beginning of training camp. The other thing I wanted to discuss before we get to the interview, Ray Allen's retirement. Now, I don't have much to say about his retirement. He hasn't played for 2+ years. Feels like we've talked a lot about Ray Allen over the last 4-5 years since he left the Celtics. One thing I will say, obviously his end was not good. He decided to join the Miami Heat, who had just beaten the Celtics in the playoffs. He pissed off Kevin Garnett something fierce. He left a team that really, really hated that he left. Before that, though, I mean, the Celtics wouldn't win the 08 championship without him. If you don't think back to that finals against the Lakers, what were they down, 24 points in game 4? And the highlight of that game was Ray Allen skating by Saša Vujačić, dancing in for a wide-open layup. If that doesn't give you chills thinking back to that, then I'm not sure if you're a Celtics fan. He had some unbelievable moments. Nothing in the world was more beautiful than Rondo running the break, pitching it to the trailing Ray Allen for that beautiful, beautiful three-pointer of his. So conflicted thoughts on Ray Allen, sure, but the dude had a hell of a career. And I guess it's time to celebrate it now that he's finally hung it up. No more rumors about his possible return. He is officially retired at the age of 41. All right. Now that we've got the Ray Allen, Avery Bradley stuff out of the way, it's time for our interview with Ryan Bernardoni of Celtics Hub. Everyone go follow him on Twitter at DangerCart. He's a great guy to follow, a very sharp guy, very, very provides great Celtics analysis. So go follow him, and here is that interview. All right, so I'm here now with Ryan Bernardoni of Celtics Hub. Hopefully I didn't botch the name too badly, but he is a bit of a collective bargaining agreement expert. He is a self-taught collective bargaining agreement expert, someone who's really knowledgeable on the subject. Everybody should go to Celtics Hub right now, read the piece he wrote recently called Analyzing the Rumored CBA Changes, where he did a good job of breaking down how possible CBA changes, which would come into effect next summer, would affect the Celtics and their future plans and everything like that. So welcome, Ryan. Thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me again. 3 for 3 on the name, so you're doing good.
All right. I got the name right. That's very, very good start for me. So yeah, we always appreciate having you on. Everybody should go follow Ryan at DangerCart, DangerCart, DangerCart on Twitter. He's a great Twitter follow when he's not tweeting about politics, and that'll be done soon because the presidential election is almost over. But anyway, let's get into the Celtics because that's what you guys are listening for. What stood out to you, Ryan, as the biggest possible CBA change that would impact the Celtics?
I don't know if there's a single one at this point. I think that what we're seeing is sort of a more sort of general tenor of what the rumors are, which is that maybe in reaction to what's happened with the Warriors, maybe not, that the league is trying to make it more difficult for sort of super teams to be created, right? And this has been something that they've tried to do in the past in ways that have worked or not worked. Some of them that they were trying to, some things that they tried to do in the last one to sort of avoid the Miami Heat sort of situation inadvertently led to what happened with Golden State here. So whether or not these things work or not, we aren't sure, but they're starting to put rules, or at least we're hearing that they're putting rules in place that will make it sort of harder for these super teams to form. And the Celtics, being that they're in a position where they've been trying to form a super team and will continue to until they sort of run out of time on some contracts, you know, those things potentially hurt them because just the sort of way that they've been planning, it all happens to be coming to a head at a time when a new CBA may have come out that's running counter to what they're trying to do. So I think that's been the sort of overarching sort of theme we've seen on a bunch of different things for the CBA. There are specific things in there that I can get into or we can get into. But I think that's really the big thing is that they're just sort of the league is going in a way that's really going counter to what the Celtics had been hoping to do.
Yeah, it's like the Celtics spent years putting possibilities together for last summer when they went after Al Horford and Kevin Durant and almost got Durant, and this summer for when they can chase after another star, whether it's Blake Griffin, probably not Chris Paul, but he'll be out there. Even Stephen Curry, Kevin Durant, who knows what happens with Golden State this year. Gordon Hayward's going to be out there. There are still a lot of guys out there this year. And the CBA could screw everything up. So one guy who has already been impacted by this is Kelly Olynyk. And Kelly Olynyk, a lot of guys in his draft class got extensions before the Monday night deadline. Kelly Olynyk did not. And he knew he wasn't going to get it because the Celtics have prioritized cap space and they want us free maximum cap space. I want to know, is it possible, do you think, that the Celtics will need to let Kelly Olynyk walk even to free maximum cap space if they have to do that?
Yeah, yeah, almost certainly. If the offseason goes the way that they probably want it to, unfortunately, that unless there's some major trade that happens, you know, before then, which always could happen, or unless they operate via trade next summer, where that might free up some things. But let's say they sign Blake Griffin, that very likely means that Kelly Olynyk is just allowed to walk.
And that would be a good trade. It would be a fair trade there.
Right. There's actually quite a lot that they have to do to get to that point. But you still would obviously sort of do all of those things, right? So they would not only be letting Olynyk walk, but also basically the whole front court other than Al Horford. So Amir Johnson, Jonas Jerebko would both be their unrestricted free agents. They wouldn't be re-signed. Tyler Zeller has a non-guaranteed contract next year. They would let him go. The details of how some of the things are going to play out will determine exactly how much money they need to free up. But I mean, it could even get down to the point of like letting Jordan Mickey go, maybe even trying to stash Yabusele for another year. So it really is like the whole front court happens to be what's at stake. But even if it wasn't, you know, Griffin, if it was, let's say everything blows up in Golden State and Durant wants to, you know, just says this didn't work out and wants to go again. Very unlikely, but it's possible. Even if it wasn't for a power forward where you're sort of like, all right, well, we can move a lot of guys from the front court, the whole front court would probably get cleaned out anyway, just because that's the most, the sort of easiest contracts to move in terms of who are the best players on the team, but also just in terms of where their contracts are currently shaping.
Yeah, and obviously part of that you'd be able to fill in with Zizic and or Yabusele, the two draft and stash guys who are putting up huge numbers in China and Croatia. But you'd be sacrificing a lot of depth to put together that super team. And Olynyk is the guy, obviously, who's been a big part of what they've done over the past couple of years. I think a lot of casual fans, I always get tweets. Whenever I tweet about Olynyk, people, there's like a portion of fans that tweet back like, oh, he's so soft. He can't do this. He can't do that. Yeah, well, he's a really helpful offensive player who actually isn't that bad a defensive player either. So Olynyk is a key part to their rotation right now. And he's the guy to me that the CBA changes might impact the most. Is there any way that you see them losing him and not getting that star guy? Is that a possibility too?
More likely now than if you had asked me a few weeks ago, as more of the details come out. So, and the reason for that is that in the past, there's been a moratorium at the beginning of July, where nobody can officially sign any contracts. And so for anybody who isn't really familiar with it, I know you are, but to anybody who isn't particularly familiar with it, there's this period where there's a whole bunch of news that comes out. This player has agreed to go there. This player has agreed to sign that. You hear all this stuff, but none of it actually can officially be signed until this period of time, about a week, maybe a little bit longer than that, some years, ends. Because during that time, they are finalizing an audit of the league that sets the exact salary cap. So there are some things that you can do during that time period. You can sign minimum contracts and things like that, or at least under the past CBA, things that have nothing to do with the salary cap. But you couldn't officially sign the majority of contract types. And because of that, teams couldn't sign restricted free agents to offer sheets until the end of that time period. So basically, teams that had restricted free agents had a period of a week, or you know, about a week, where nobody else could even officially log an offer for their player. So they had this really long period of time where they just could, you know, go play in restricted free agency, knowing that their restricted free agents were going to be sitting there when things started to sort of work their way out. That's apparently going away, where teams will be able to sign offer sheets for restricted free agents from other teams on the first day that free agency opens, so July 1st. Add into that some other things that probably won't impact Olynyk, but that might impact some restricted free agents. Teams won't be able to rescind their qualifying offers anymore. So like last year, the Celtics extended qualifying offers to both Zeller and Sullinger, making them both restricted. When they decided that Zeller was coming back, they rescinded their offer to Sullinger so they wouldn't be stuck with both of them. The ability to do that's going away. Probably won't impact Olynyk because somebody else will sign him for more than his qualifying offer, basically, if it comes to that. But the issue is that if a team can sign him to a qualifying offer on the first day of free agency, and let's say they want to go and chase Blake Griffin and they think they have a reasonable chance of getting him, and Blake comes out and says that he's not going to be talking to the Celtics until July 4th, July 5th, whatever it might be, they don't have that window anymore where like they can basically be playing in that space knowing that Olynyk can't do anything. So if Kelly goes out and signs a contract for, you know, $15 million a year on July 1st, then the Celtics have 2 days to match it. And if they don't know for sure that, you know, that they have or don't have a particular max free agent that they may be going after, then they'll be in a position where they may have to just walk away and say, like, we really like Kelly, but he doesn't turn us into a contender. And basically just, even if they think they have a, you know, 25% chance of getting Blake Griffin, like, they may legitimately choose to just let Kelly go and chase that, you know, that higher upside team, which would be really difficult and really unfortunate, because that would not have been a problem the year before. But that does look like the way the new agreement's going to go.
Yeah, and that's the issue to me. Like, if you lose Kelly Olynyk and you get Blake Griffin, awesome. Like, that's completely fine. You're okay with that, because then you'd have Al Horford, you'd have Blake Griffin, you'd have still have Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart, all those guys, and then you'd be able to keep Yabusele, Zizic, whatever, and still have at least a halfway somewhat serviceable, probably, backcourt or backup front court. But if you lose Olynyk and don't get that guy, then that's a huge issue. What do you think? Obviously, you know, the Celtics they decided not to pick up the fourth year option for James Young. Did you take away anything from that? Did you think that signified anything to you about the team's plans?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, the easiest answer is that they don't think that James Young and RJ Hunter are good enough to be on the team going forward, and they have enough other options. And, you know, that's sort of the easiest explanation, but it's not generally the way the team works, because they're usually the last team in the league to, like, actually officially make a decision. And they actually were in this case too. They let these things go to the very end line, to the very deadline. But, you know, they normally sort of string these things out as far as they can. They don't want to give up on anything until they really have to. The fact that they made the decisions that they did on both of those players might be an indication that they think that all of the sort of things that impact how much cap space they're going to have are going to come in on the low end. So the salary cap at one point had been projected up around like 107 or 108. And then at the beginning of this summer, it moved down the projection to 102. Now it's up to 103 million. Normally the early season projections are a little bit conservative, and you expect it to sort of creep up, and maybe it would end up at 105.5 or something like that. But there's also talk in the CBA, in the new CBA sort of rumors, that there might be the famed cap smoothing that didn't happen last year and allowed Golden State to sort of put together the team they did, which would say sort of in any given year, the cap can only increase by a certain amount. And so if that were to be, say, 10%, could be less than that, 8%, whatever it might be, you're looking at a salary cap that might actually be limited to like 103 something million, where it really can't creep up anymore. So if the cap is limited at that kind of number, and you start to put together some of the other rumors that are coming out, or at least conjectures in some of these cases more than rumors, like maybe max contract tiers will change, and someone like Blake Griffin might not be a 7 to 9 year player. There might be an 8+ year tier for largest maxes, or things like that, that could really make sort of every dollar of available cap space matter. If the team is looking at these sorts of things and getting indications from the league or whatever it might be, or just planning for worst case scenarios, then, you know, the $2.8 million that they owe, you know, that they would have owed to James Young, that they could have cut into a third by stretching him, or maybe they could have given something up to trade him away. They seem to have basically just said, it's not worth it. That bit of cap space might be the difference between something really big and not being able to pull it off, or at least having other challenges. So they just walked away. So, I mean, I see indications there, but I see indications in everything, so who knows whether or not they actually are meaningful or not.
Ryan likes to examine all aspects of every move, which is why he's a great follow. Everybody go follow him at Danger Cart. So obviously what we're talking about would be the next CBA, and it hasn't even come out yet. This all the stuff we're talking about is just rumored changes. It's not necessarily even going to come into existence. These are all factors that could potentially play into the Celtics' future. We're not sure at all whether that's actually the case. We are kind of going off conjecture. We are going off reports. We are going off a lot of different pieces. But right now, would you say, Ryan, that Celtics fans should be rooting for that cap to go as high as possible?
Yes. Yeah. The higher the cap goes, the more space the Celtics have to basically play with. And, you know, if you're hoping for that big splash or even a bigger splash than Al Horford this past summer, then yeah, pushing the cap up to $107-108 million, like if that can happen, it opens up some other possibilities. It means that you know, if Yabusele, who possibly was drafted specifically because he will stay out of the NBA for another year, that was sort of one of the things that was said on draft night. If he decides that he wants to come over next summer, then that's less of a problem if the cap is all the way up at 107 or 108. The possibility that you would have to trade or waive Jordan Mickey or Demetrius Jackson or something like that, that becomes less of an issue as well. So the higher the cap pushes, the less sort of concern you have on the fringes of the team. If you were to pair a low cap with what I was saying about how, you know, if they shifted the max tiers down, then things get really tight. Like then Blake Griffin could say he wants to come and you would be forced to move a good, like a really good player that you don't want to move in order to make that happen. So there's some things that could go very wrong here but that could become very challenging. But if you get a higher cap number, if they put smoothing in, but it doesn't apply until a couple of years from now, or it's 15, you know, there's some sort of percentage that doesn't really impact it. Yeah, it's definitely better for the Celtics if the number comes in high.
Yeah, and that's what's so hard about building a team. Like, literally, they've spent years planning for this summer, basically probably thinking that most of the old CBA would still be in existence. And now it's like, you got to worry about this rule change and that rule change. I can't even imagine being in a front office trying to decide between the different scenarios and choose how you're going to have to act, knowing that, okay, Kelly Olynyk might get this offer July 1st. We might have to speak to Blake Griffin the 4th. What do we prioritize? What are we going to do? It's all crazy. You said on Twitter that the more you look at things, the more you think this leads to the team going young in 2018 if the Nets picks are as high as projected. What did you mean by that and why?
Yeah, so it's that's part of that sort of planning and how the league is shaping or is trying to shape teams. So if the league puts out a new CBA and everybody agrees, and the Celtics are part of that process, right? They are an ownership stake in the league. So it's not like this is all happening without them knowing what's going on or having any say in it. But if the league says, basically, we're going to put these rules in place to shut the door behind the Warriors. So what the Warriors did with being able to sign, you know, or sign a free agent, the caliber of Durant after being as good as they were, if we're going to sort of say we're doing everything we can to stop that in the future, then teams have to make a decision. They have to make bets now on how they think that the CBA is going to go, and teams make good and bad decisions trying to project those things. And then they have to make decisions after on how they're going to react to those changes. Now, if the league is saying we're making this harder, then teams can make two decisions from there. They can say either we will accept that the league is incentivizing us to go in a direction, and we will go in that direction. In the case of the Celtics, that would be the league doesn't want us to be able to put together super teams in free agency. We have all these, you know, potentially very good draft picks. What if we just build internally and we say we're not going to be able to get another, or the price that it's going to cost in terms of giving up talent, cutting to make cap space in order to get another max player isn't going to get us where we want to go. That path has run its course, and we're just simply, going to get younger and go with these draft picks. And this, we'll look at this period as being like, oh, they went through that weird transitional period where they were pretty good, and then they went back to getting young and trying to build up from there. And if the league is incentivizing that, then you have to say that that's a more likely route for teams to start going. The other thing they could do is go against it. They could say there's 25 teams doing that. We're going to be the one going the other way, zig when everybody zags, and try to basically go against the grain of the league and try to find some sort of market inefficiency in there. So it's not like I'm saying they're definitely going to do this. It may be that this summer they literally get Al Horford, or that they literally get Blake Griffin or Kevin Durant, and it sounds silly, but if the league's pushing teams that way, then you have to at least think it's more likely that teams will go that way.
Yeah. Now, okay. Now, you were the first one I saw ever at anywhere on the internet, at least, definitely in person, say that you predicted the Celtics would go after both Horford and Durant. I don't, What did you do that, a year before it actually happened?
Probably a little more than that. I mean, I thought there were a couple other people who were with me on it, maybe. But yeah, I mean,
A year and a half. Don't be humble. You were the
probably
first
a year and a half, yeah.
person out there publicly to do that. And you went out on a limb, which ended up being perfectly correct. You predicted everything they were going to do this past summer. Do you have a prediction for what they will try to do? Like what their plan A is this summer?
I think that their plan was last summer. That the sort of mm-hmm. point of confluence of all the things that they were hoping for was last summer. And personally, it's very hard for me not to look back at the last finals and say, basically, if Draymond Green doesn't get suspended and the Warriors close it out, then maybe Durant's here. Even if he's not here, he doesn't probably go to Golden State, which means you don't have this super team that pushes the CBA in a direction that may shut off avenues for the Celtics there. Like, I see sort of things going out from that moment that have, where the team had a lot of things that they came close on and they didn't quite work. I don't see as clear of a, as clear of a sort of target as I did for last summer. Now, there are obviously targets. The one that I've been saying is Blake Griffin. I'm sure they would be very happy to get him, and he and Al Horford would be an interesting front court that would give a lot of people a lot of problems. And if they could get him, great. Honestly, I still don't know if that's a title team. It's really hard to win a title in the NBA. But that would be a really, really, really good team. That would be very interesting, and they would still have all these draft picks and things like that. The other one is, the one that a lot of people put out there, and that I think that they would really like to see Larry Bird fail and for Indiana to struggle and decide that their future is Miles Turner, and that they're going to trade Paul George, and that the Celtics are going to go in for Paul George. But really, like I said, it looks more and more to me like this is that we are in the middle of a 8-year rebuild, not a 2-year rebuild and then a veteran team. Those things are just not that likely to happen. Blake Griffin is probably going to stay in LA. Paul George is probably going to stay with the Pacers. And 2 years from now, or a year and a little more from now, the Celtics will see their cap space sort of no longer usable, and they will probably re-sign Avery Bradley and maybe not Isaiah Thomas, and they will maybe look to trade Al Horford with 2 years left on his deal for another young player that aligns more with a team of Jaylen Brown and whoever they draft this year and whoever they draft the year after that and whoever they draft with future Memphis picks and Clippers picks and Celtics picks if the Celtics become bad again, and maybe Zizic follows in the sort of Jokic, Nurkic path out of the Adriatic League, and they have this sort of really good young team. So that, like I said, I look that far out and I'm like, that looks more likely to me a destination than any specific acquisition that would make people a lot more excited in the short term, which is not as much fun, but that's sort of where my mind goes on it.
And obviously the reason your mind does go that way is because the Celtics, they've been very clear. They're not like a lot of teams that are okay with being third, second place. They want a championship, and that's the only thing they want. So right now they have a window where they have cap flexibility and they have a lot of young assets and they have draft picks to trade for people. But that window goes away, as you said, before the summer of 2018 arrives, and Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart, all up for new deals. So there is a window. There's a window on this certain core, I guess, and that's why we've already got Ryan predicting that they're going to trade Al Horford, who has played a grand total of 3 games with the Celtics.
He's got like 170 more with the Celtics before they'll trade, including playoffs. Yeah, and like I said, we're looking far out. You can spin that whole thing out, and I'm just saying sort of that general path, right? The specifics of like, we will trade Al Horford in the summer of 2018 is less likely than we will sign a player in the summer of 2017, just because how far it is. But the sort of general idea of that, where this team is heading, is, like I said, that we are still actually in the middle of a rebuild and just aren't acting like it. And I say we, and I'm going to continue to say we. But
there you go.
Yeah, I mean, it just it looks that way to me. Like, in this case, I hope I'm wrong. With the predictions for last summer, obviously, I was really hoping that it would work out. I would like for this team to win the title in 2 years, but it may be that the team that we're watching is a bunch of 22-year-olds.
Obviously, the Celtics have not made a trade yet. They have not traded for DeMarcus Cousins, Jimmy Butler, anybody else who has been rumored, any star. They have not made that deal. They picked up Isaiah Thomas for the cheap. They picked up Jay Crowder for the cheap, but they have not gone after that huge star piece. Do you think this makes Danny Ainge more, or not that they have not gone after, they have not pulled the trigger on a deal to get one of these big stars. Do you think this makes Danny Ainge more likely to take a risk with one of those Brooklyn picks and say, you know what, let's go after one of these stars? Or do you think he steers away from that because it is risky and they would rather, you know, go with the young guys? Or does it probably depends too on how good Jaylen Brown becomes, whether Marcus Smart takes a little bit of a leap or more, Terry Rozier, everything. There are so many factors that go into all this. But do you think it makes him more aggressive looking at the trade market?
Well, so I think an important thing to consider in this is that nobody else has made that trade either, right? It's not like that, like, these players have been moving and the Celtics have been deciding that they weren't willing to pay the price. Who's been traded, right? That you look at and you're like, how come they missed out on that? Oh, they definitely could have beat that offer. The players just haven't been moving. So it's hard for me to sort of get a read on how much they've been willing to give up to this point. Maybe they've been willing to sell the farm to get these players already, and just other teams are saying no, and you can't force somebody. You can offer everything. If the other team is just like, no, we don't want to do it, then you're kind of stuck there. So it may be that they're already going forward. I sort of don't think they are unless exactly the right player came up. But yeah, I mean, as free agency potentially recedes from the sort of realm of possibilities, if the CBA is even tougher than it looks like it's going to be right now and where they're going, then obviously trades become a more attractive option. One, because you don't have free agency as an option. Two, because if the CBA makes it harder for players to leave, maybe acquiring a player who doesn't have as long of a contract isn't as big of an issue, because you think that they are going to be, you're going to have more advantages in trying to keep them anyway. So it may increase the value of a player that you're acquiring in trade. So there's a lot of things that go into it, but really, I mean, if Paul George is available for trade, I'm pretty sure they'll give what they have to give to get him. If he's not available, or anybody else like that isn't available, or is only pretend available, where like you can just give an absolutely ridiculous amount and then the team will start talking to you. Like, I don't think they're any more likely to do that, because I think that Danny Ainge is maybe the most realistic person about his team of anybody affiliated with the Celtics. Like, Ainge is always very realistic about where the team is. And I think he will look at some players who might be semi-available and say, like, you know what? That makes me a 55-win team that loses in the Eastern Conference Finals instead of a 53-win team that loses in the Eastern Conference Finals. I'm not going to give up, you know, the number 3 pick in a loaded draft to do that. So I think it makes it somewhat more likely, but it's hard. It's a tough market when nobody's moving.
There you go. Ryan Bernardoni with a little bit of a grim view of the Celtics' future, but that's why we bring him on. Because
I don't think so. I don't think it's a grim view. Like, I think maybe they'll have, you know, like, what if they have Markelle Fultz and DeAndre Ayton and Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart? Like, they could have, 3 years from now, you could be looking at a team that looks like the Timberwolves look like now, right? Like, people could be super excited about the team. It's not necessarily a bad path. Now, it might not be. They might get, you know, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and Cody Zeller with their top 5 picks instead of Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. Like, you don't know how it's going to play out, but you also may put all your eggs in the free agency basket and then strike out, or end up, you know, signing whoever the 10th best free agent is and paying him a max contract just because the money was there. Like, there's no guarantees there. That's why they try to keep everything open. So I don't look at it as grim. I know sometimes people think that I am looking at it that way. I'm really excited about the team's future. I just don't know exactly what that future is, which is part of the fun, right? Like if I knew everything, or if you knew everything, or if anybody knew everything, there would be no point in paying attention.
Yeah, so there are a lot of avenues to go, a lot of avenues for Danny Ainge to consider, to do. They might be the Timberwolves in 3 years, I guess. So yeah,
who knows?
Excited, guys.
They could be the 2008 Celtics. They could be the 2016 Timberwolves. All things are possible. Just ignore the bad ones.
Yeah. The 2016 Timberwolves with Brad Stevens as a coach instead of Thibs.
One thing to put in there. The one very good bit of news that's coming out of the possible CBA talks.
Good news. We're leaving you off with good news, guys.
And this is actually a pretty big deal. So the one and done rule, right, that says draft eligible players have to be 1 year out of high school. So usually that means they go to college for 1 year, not always, but it says that they have to be 1 year out of high school. There was talk that they were going to try to change that to a two and done rule. If you look back at the 2006 draft, the reason it's so terrible is because that's when they implemented the one and done rule. So if they hadn't in that CBA, then that draft would have been high school phenoms, Greg Oden and Kevin Durant. The problem was that the year before, the best freshmen or the best high school seniors, and it wasn't a very good class of high school seniors, but the best high school seniors like Andrew Bynum left early. They left out of high school. The next year, all of the best freshmen in college or who had been freshmen in college had to stay an extra year. So there's this gap year where the draft is terrible. If they had instituted two and done this year, then the Nets pick next year that right now is like all of these, you know, it's, like I said, the Markelle Fultz, Dennis Smith Jr., what's his name? Not Dennis. Yeah, Dennis Smith Jr. I think I'm terrible at the draft. I don't pay attention to anything other than UConn. All of these players that look like they might be future all-stars would all get pushed a year ahead. And while the Celtics also might have a really high pick in that draft that would then become a ridiculously loaded class then, there would be this gap year where the draft would be terrible and the Celtics pick would be kind of valueless on the market because it would only be the players left over from last draft who weren't good enough to leave. So that's the one really good piece of news out of the CBA is that it doesn't look like that's changing, which means that the next two Nets picks are safe. And, you know, if it becomes, if you're the Timberwolves in 3 years, you may look back and say, we got saved. The CBA, they didn't push whoever else, you know, whoever the Celtics drafts a year ahead and cost them. It's actually like a legitimately good piece of news. So there's that.
There you go. We ended up with the good news. The news that saves the possibility that the Celtics will become the Timberwolves in 3 years. So thank you very much, Ryan. We appreciate you always coming on, giving the perspective, giving some great perspective, teaching us, giving us a real lesson, education. We appreciate you. Everyone, go follow his stuff at CelticsHub.com. Follow him on Twitter at DangerCart, DangerCart. His Twitter avatar is a cat. I don't think that's actually him. It might be. I've never seen him in person. So everyone go follow him. Ryan, we appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Anytime.
All right. Take care, man.
Bye.
All right, so that was Ryan Bernardoni of Celtics Hub. As I've reminded you several times, go follow him on Twitter at DangerCart. Always worthwhile follow. Before we let you go, we're going to end the show with an interview my co-host John Corrales did with the Downtown with Rich Kimball show from Bangor, Maine. We're going to tack that on to the end of the show. Stay tuned. Listen to that. John is fantastic. He's always worth a listen. So make sure you stay tuned for that. And, of course, follow us. Search for the Locked On Celtics podcast wherever you get your podcast, iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher, wherever else. Search for us. Follow us. Give us a 5-star rating. Make us a part of your everyday life. Honestly, your lives will be much, much better. We will enhance your daily routine whenever you listen to us. So go do that. And yeah, that was it for this episode of the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
15 minutes shy of 4 o'clock. Got you Tuesday downtown on the Pulse, WZON. And it is a time we've been waiting for quite a while here. Time to start talking Celtics on a weekly basis with our next guest. He's just the best there is when it comes to Celtics talk. You know him from RedsArmy.com and the Locked On Celtics podcast. John Corrales, welcome on back to downtown.
Oh, I'm so happy to be back. It means the season's back. Time to talk some basketball.
Yeah, Christmas in November for us, and off to a pretty good start. A nice win over Charlotte the other night.
Yeah, a nice bounce back after the loss to Chicago. Some good things happening in that game, especially from Avery Bradley, who's off to an amazing start this season. His offense seems to have evolved. Isaiah Thomas doing some of the same things, and Jay Crowder having an underrated, really good season so far.
How do you feel like Al Horford is filling in, John?
I think he's doing a really nice job. He's having the type of season I think that we kind of expected. The numbers certainly don't do him justice. You can attribute some of Avery Bradley's success to Al Horford, and a lot of the team's success to Al Horford because he's raising everybody else's games right now. He has had a big impact on giving Avery Bradley some space to do his work. He's assisted on a bunch of Avery Bradley baskets so far, and he's just making the right decisions. He's making good plays for other players on the floor, giving them a little bit more room to get their shots off. And look, the Celtics are not going to be confused for the Warriors when it comes to shooting. Right. So when they get an extra beat to shoot their shots, that's really going to help increase their percentages. They're not going to be hitting a lot of those contested shots like some other guys in the league.
I don't want to go too far back in time, but did the fact that the Celtics kept James Young over R.J. Hunter surprise you at all?
A little bit, because Young is a little bit older, a little bit more advanced as far as his career goes. I thought they'd want to hold on to Hunter and see how he progressed, but apparently they just thought that he wasn't going to do what they needed him to do fast enough, and that Young would be more of an immediate contributor. Now, look, they didn't pick up his option either, so this is a very short-term view. I think they kind of have essentially cut ties with both of them, except they're just paying James Young to be part of the team this year. He's a little more advanced physically than R.J. Hunter, so if we get to a point where we need a lot of James Young, he's at least big and strong enough to get in there and handle some of the rigors of today's NBA. Whereas R.J. Hunter, I think he's a better IQ-wise, a better overall basketball player, but he's just physically not able to do some of the things the Celtics need defensively. So in a very short-term sense, it made sense in that regard, because he can, if pressed for service, go in and at least switch and defend a couple of positions somewhat. Clearly, this is not a big ringing endorsement. I don't think right. They were very enamored with either of these guys.
Thinking about some of the rest of the players on the team, I'm excited you brought up Jay Crowder, John, because I'm of the opinion that I don't know if I want to use superstar or even the word star, but I feel like he's turning himself into one of those peripheral all-star candidates. Do you agree?
I agree, yeah. I think he's going to be a guy that gets at least some consideration when the all-star, he's never going to get voted in.
Right.
Let's not kid ourselves. But he is going to get some consideration depending on who does get voted in, who maybe skips the game, who's hurt around game time. He might be a guy that, if the Celtics are where we expect them to be, which is somewhere the second or third seed, they'll probably get a couple of guys voted in. It'll probably be Isaiah Thomas, and it may be Al Horford, it may not. But Crowder will be in that mix for some consideration. He does a lot. His shooting has improved. He obviously defends three and four positions. He's doing a lot of positive things for the Celtics. And, you know, you look down and you see Isaiah Thomas having a great game and Avery Bradley having a great game. You look down at the stat sheet and Crowder is filling it up. He's doing a lot. So I think he's kind of a fly under the radar type of guy because so much of the focus is on defense. But offensively, so far at least, he's made a nice contribution, and I think that's going to continue.
We're talking with John Corrales, RedsArmy.com, Locked On Celtics podcast. John, if this team is going to be a 2 or 3 seed in the East, who's the one guy who's really got to step up his game the most?
Well, I'm looking at maybe Marcus Smart, who's going to make his return. His absence has been pretty noticeable for the Celtics. The return of Marcus Smart and him playing really, really well has a pretty wide-ranging impact on this team. Obviously, defensively, he's a pit bull out there. But he can play in the called Chaotic Five lineup that includes Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, Al Horford out there, and then you could put Amir Johnson or Jaylen Brown. You can have options out there with him. So he can, again, like I was talking about Crowder, defend multiple positions. And what that means is you can switch. When these other teams are trying to run their different options and try to get you all confused, if you just switch and when your guy is setting a pick and the other guy, you just switch on to the guy that's coming off of the pick. You don't have to worry about fighting through or going over or going under. That just makes your defense so much more crisp. It stops so much. We have the ability to do that without losing anybody, without getting a mismatch. That's huge. And the Celtics can do that with Smart on the floor. But they can't do it without Smart on the floor. They can't put that same type of lineup out there. And then offensively, he's shown that he can handle the ball and basically be your backup point guard. I know coming into the season they were talking about Terry Rozier being the backup point guard. I like him a lot more off the ball. I like Marcus Smart kind of handling the ball in a half-court situation and letting Rozier come off the ball, come off screens, catch and shoot. And then once that happened, then Rozier can put the ball on the floor and make a pass, and Marcus Smart can do his other thing. But I like Smart initiating the offense like that. But you put him and Rozier on the floor together, I think it makes Rozier better. So he has a big impact on both sides of the floor. So if he can do that all season, you're going to see a big difference.
Another guy that is out there that hasn't gotten onto the floor yet is Kelly Olynyk. And how do you think his presence is going to affect the way that Brad has got the rotation set up?
Oh, well, he's, I think, another key piece to this whole puzzle, because he'll be coming off the bench, and that bench has really struggled so far in three games. He'll be one of the key contributors. He might be their primary option when you talk about the second unit. They're going to need him to be aggressive. They're going to need him to hit a bunch of shots. And if he is aggressive and he's shooting, if the shoulder holds up and it's not affecting his shooting, can hit his three-pointer at his normal rate, that'll be really huge, because you got to respect that three-pointer whenever it's out there, and that just gives everyone else more space to operate. So if you throw him out there in place of Amir Johnson, you sub him in a few minutes into the game, now you've got a big-time threat from the perimeter that will allow Isaiah Thomas, Al Horford, everybody else just an extra step to do their thing. And then as you start rotating in some of these bench guys, you look at him as a leader, a guy that needs to be aggressive. That might actually get him out of that shell that we've been so concerned about over the first few years of his career, where he just needs to go for his own shot. He's so versatile offensively. He can put the ball on the floor. He can get to the basket. He can make the right pass. If he just goes and looks for it on a regular basis, he's really, really going to be a big part of that bench. They need his scoring. And if he does all this stuff, and they just declined to extend his contract next year, all these contract extensions out there, he's kind of playing for a contract. He's going to be a restricted free agent. So he has a lot of incentive to get out there and be the type of scorer they need him to be.
Bulls tomorrow night, and we were talking about this earlier. Are you surprised at what they're doing, how well they're playing in the early going?
A little bit. I was one of the people who was saying they can't shoot, and they're going out there dropping threes like crazy. I don't think that's sustainable. We're in what a lot of people like to call small sample type theater, where you throw out three games worth of performance, and for whatever reason, some people are more motivated to do certain things. And everybody has their hot stretches, and everybody has their cold stretches, and it's fun to look at 1 week of NBA performance and say, wow, I didn't see this coming. Well, we'll revisit this in a couple of weeks to see if that shooting holds up. I don't think it will, and I think there's some of those issues for the Bulls will eventually come up and show themselves. But for now, what are you going to do? You just throw your hands up and you say, if those guys are going to beat us from three, then congratulations, you win.
There you go. John Corrales talking Celtics every Tuesday afternoon here on the program. John, great to have you back on. Let's do it again next week.
Let's do it. I love it.
You got it. John.
Hi, you've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion.
Old Navy.
Valid 10-2 to 10-10. Select styles only.